in the Gaza Strip with friends and friends of friends, again, dying. It's not as if I don't have friends in the Gaza Strip. We see, and then we see the academia and education system. I mean, all the universities have been bombed in the Gaza Strip. We have almost half the schools are either damaged or destroyed. One third of these schools are irreparable. So one third of the children, even after the war, will not have schools to return to. So it's just complete devastation, and it's beyond words at this point.
Israeli scholar Niamh Gordon, professor of international law and human rights at Queen Mary University of London, chair of the Committee on Academic Freedom for British Society of Middle East Studies, and chair of the Committee on Academic Freedom for British Society. He's the author of several books, including Israel's Occupation, and co-author of Human Shields, A History of People in the Line of Fire, co-editor of Torture, Human Rights, Medical Ethics, and the Case of Israel. To see our full interview with Niamh Gordon, you can go to democracynow.org. A happy birthday to Anna Özbek and Maria Inez Taracena. Democracy Now! Is currently accepting applications for our digital fellowship. You can learn more and apply at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Feltz, Mike Burke, Dina Guzder, Sharif Abdelkadous, Messiah Rhodes, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Taracena, Tammy Warnoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
What is climate change? How is it affecting our lives? And what can we do about it? We'll connect the dots, from energy to extreme weather, public health, and more. I'm Dr. Anthony Leiserwitz. Join me for Climate Connections during the evening news, weekdays at 5 p.m. here on 90.7 KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Development and Events Committee meets on the third Monday of the month at 5:30 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Are you a fan of early rock and roll, doo-wop, rhythm and blues, and 70s rock? If so, The Roots of Rock and Roll is the show for you, and KBOO Portland is the place to be Friday afternoons at 3. Dale Farr will give you a history lesson from the birth of rock and roll through the 50s and 60s. And Ray Bodwell will mine the 60s and 70s for the deep cuts, hidden gems, and variety that you won't hear on generic classic rock stations. So tune in to The Roots of Rock and Roll, Fridays at 3 p.m. on KBOO Portland, your community radio station.
Support for this program comes from KBOO members in the Portland Housing Bureau, announcing the opening of the North Northeast Homeownership Preference Policy Waitlist, helping longtime and displaced residents to purchase a home in their community. The application deadline is April 19th. Information for the Homeownership Preference Policy Waitlist at portland.gov/phb.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland's interim police chief makes it permanent.
The Multnomah County Library reduces service due to staffing issues.
And in national news, the death of O.J. Simpson prompts new reflections on media literacy in the years since his infamous trial.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 12th, 2024. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Josh Salem. Portland's interim police chief, Bob Day, is making things permanent. Mayor Ted Wheeler initially brought Day on to fill the gap until the new city administrator and mayor hired a new police chief in June of 2025. Now, it seems he's had a change of heart. Wheeler announced today that Day will take the job permanently. Day started on the force in 1990, working his way up to leading several different departments. He was deputy chief for then Police Chief Danielle Outlaw in May of 2018. He retired from the police bureau in 2019 until Wheeler brought him on as interim chief last fall, when Chuck Lovell was stepping back from the role. Wheeler said in a statement that keeping Day for the foreseeable future will help advance other goals in the department. These include keeping up with the city's settlement with the Department of Justice for its pattern of using excessive force against people in mental distress, and implementing a new police oversight board. For his part, Chief Day told KGW he is mainly focused on June of 2025, and whether he will stay in the role beyond that remains to be seen.
Multnomah County Library users may have noticed some unusual closures at their local branch, and not only the 6 library locations under construction. Throughout March, the Belmont, Gresham, and Northwest Portland branches of the library changed to door service 6 times. Library patrons could pick up books, get general info from library staff, or request photocopies and printouts at the door, but they couldn't go inside. It has to do with an amendment to the library's union contract that took effect in March. In it, library workers can opt in to be the person in charge of security while they're on duty and get a 15% pay bump when they do. Before the new contract, library staff would be assigned that role. In March, there were at times no library staff willing to be the person in charge of security and complaints, so the library switched to door service. The change in the contract comes after a survey of staff showed that some felt unsafe at work because of unruly patrons and a prevalence of drug use at some branches. The library is hiring 7 new supervisors who will focus on monitoring security concerns. The library says they've offered the gig to 4 candidates so far and are working to fill the other openings.
Washington residents can now file their simple income tax forms for free and save time through the IRS Direct File Pilot Program. The Treasury Department estimates that over 1 million Washington State taxpayers will be eligible, saving them money on filing fees. With the April 15th income tax filing deadline right around the corner, Adam Rubin of the Economic Security Project says you can easily use the program by visiting the website directfile.irs.gov.
It's an interview-based questionnaire, so it's something that people can use on their phones, on their computers, available in English and Spanish, that asks people questions in pretty much plain language, and you fill in the answers, and it fills in the tax form for you.
Washington is one of a dozen states where IRS Direct File is being piloted. If it were to expand nationwide and be available to more taxpayers, Rubin estimates that within 5 years, it could save Americans $8 billion in tax prep fees and another $3 billion worth of time annually. But opponents argue the government is wasting resources and will snag business from professional tax preparers and programs that have lobbied against Direct File. Chris Marino with Catalyst Miami, a Florida nonprofit that works with communities through a variety of free services, says a stress-free filing process that can be done from the comfort of your home or the convenience of your phone is worth taking advantage of.
If you are a average worker who, you know, gets a W-2, I mean, you're employed for a company, you don't own any companies or businesses, you'd probably be the ideal candidate for someone to be able to use Direct File this year.
While a free file program has been available, many taxpayers were unaware they had access to it. An investigation by ProPublica revealed tax tactics by Intuit, maker of TurboTax, to cloud the free file program. And state auditors, comptrollers, and treasurers in 18 states sent a letter in March to the federal government urging the termination of Direct File. They claim it might lead to confusion about state tax filings, potentially resulting in penalties and loss of state refunds.
The Catholic Church says abortion is wrong and that the procedure should not be legal. However, 6 in 10 United States adult Catholics say abortion should be legal in all or most cases. This comes from a newly published Pew Research Center poll. Pew conducted an analysis of the basic demographic attributes, religious characteristics, and political preferences of U.S. Catholics, who are one of the largest religious groups in the states. Opinions about abortion rights tended to align with political views. Catholic Democrats favor legal abortion more commonly than Catholic Republicans. Hispanic Catholics make up 1/3 of the U.S. church, and they are slightly more in favor of legal abortion than white Catholics. Pope Francis and the Vatican have previously called abortion murder and recently said medical transition goes against the Church's conception of the natural order. The Pope remains highly popular, with 75% of U.S. Catholics rating him favorably. About 4 in 10 U.S. Catholics view Francis as a major agent of change. Many U.S. Catholics would welcome more change. Over 80% say they want the Church to allow the use of birth control, and a majority agree the priest should be allowed to marry, women should be allowed to become priests, and the Catholic Church should recognize same-sex marriage. In December 2023, the Vatican did issue guidance to priests that they may bless people in same-sex relationships. However, those blessings are not construed in any way to be a form of marriage and may not take place as part of a worship service. The U.S. has more Catholics than all but 3 other countries: Brazil, Mexico, and the Philippines.
The U.S. Office of Management and Budget has made revisions to its race and ethnicity data collection standards by including the category Middle Eastern and North African, or MENA. The change is a first since 1997. Farah Siddiqui reports.
Until recently, many Americans of Middle Eastern or North African descent were categorized as white in government surveys, making it challenging to accurately quantify this population and assess its unique needs. But that is changing. According to the Office of Management and Budget, the new category of Middle Eastern and North African, or MENA, aims to improve the quality of federal data on race and ethnicity. Dearborn Mayor Abdullah Hamoud says it will be crucial for better understanding the diverse impacts on individuals, programs, and services for people of the Arab community.
We have been an integral part of the state since migration to the U.S. in the early 1800s in search for a destination that would better provide political, economic, and religious freedom. And this month presents an opportunity to further build bridges between communities and to shatter misconceived notions and stereotypes.
President Joe Biden highlighted the changes during his Arab American Heritage Month announcement, which is observed this month. He noted the addition of the new category for the 2030 census and other forms, and emphasized its importance for better representation and policy making. These updates come amid criticism over Biden's handling of the Gaza conflict and efforts to appeal to Arab American voters. Dearborn native Maya Berry is executive director of the Arab American Institute. She says it's important that people of Middle Eastern and North African descent have an opportunity to be counted.
One of the most deeply impactful way that it's been negative is that it views our communities as this existential other, continuously foreign or otherized, in a way that's just not consistent with both the history of our country, given we're all immigrants to this wonderful nation.
Berry says until now, Arab Americans were categorized the same as individuals of European descent, a policy that could be seen as erasing their identity and overlooking the discrimination they have encountered. For Michigan News Connection, I'm Farah Siddiqui.
President Biden's name could be left off the ballot in Alabama and Ohio. The Justice Department mandates background checks for gun show purchases, and Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds moves to allow state police to arrest undocumented immigrants. With more on the story, it's Catherine Carley with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
As long as both parties get in their certifications on time by the deadline, they're going to be on the ballot. As long as they adhere to Alabama state law, we're going to put them on the ballot.
Republican Alabama Secretary of State Wes Allen says Democrats have until August 15th to certify President Joe Biden as their candidate to get him on November's ballot. Ohio's deadline is August 7th, but the Democratic convention takes place days after those deadlines. GOP legislatures in both states made exceptions for former President Donald Trump in 2020 and face calls to do the same for Biden. A new Justice Department rule about to go into effect will force dealers to run background checks on buyers at gun shows. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre says it'll close a loophole that allows the sale of tens of thousands of untracked guns every year.
President Biden and Vice President Harris continue to call on Congress to enact universal background checks and finish the job.
Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds has signed a bill to let local and state officials arrest and deport undocumented migrants who illegally re-entered the country. A similar Texas law has been paused by a federal court, but Republican Iowa State Representative Stephen Holt says that state must push the envelope to protect residents.
We know that many have come across our border just to have a better life, but we also know that there are gang members terrorists, rapists, and those who commit murder who have also crossed our border.
Opponents say the law encourages racial harassment and is already causing fear and confusion for DACA recipients and those legally pursuing asylum. A special prosecutor will consider criminal charges against Georgia Lieutenant Governor Burt Jones for trying to overturn the 2020 election. Jones was one of 16 Georgians who served as fake electors, falsely declaring Trump won that state. He calls the investigation an abuse of power.
To take it to this length and trying to accuse individuals being criminals, I think is a little much.
Meanwhile, voting rights groups in Georgia oppose a bill headed to the governor's desk that would make it easier to challenge a voter's eligibility and make it easier to purge voter rolls. Near-total abortion bans in Arizona and Florida have left Republicans reeling and might give Democrats a winning issue. But for Arkansas 3rd District congressional candidate Caitlin Draper, it's personal. Draper says she just learned her pregnancy wasn't viable, and even her doctors don't know if she can get the standard treatment.
So it feels horrible to live in a state where your life is at risk all the time. And I'm just desperately trying to have a baby.
An Arkansas law banning abortions except to save the woman's life went into effect after Roe was reversed in 2022. Meanwhile, the Iowa Supreme Court is considering the state's six-week ban. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the KABU Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, your look behind the headlines with fairness and accuracy in reporting. At 6, it's Rising Up with Sonali. Then at 7, Civic Cipher. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 46. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy as well, but with some warmer temperatures reaching 71 degrees. Today in history, in 1955, the polio vaccine developed by Dr. Jonas Salk is declared safe and effective. Polio vaccines have eliminated the disease in most of the world. In 1988, there were 350,000 cases. Since that time, cases have decreased by well more than 99%. In 2018, there were just 33 worldwide. The quote of the day is from American children's author Beverly Cleary, who wrote in longhand on yellow legal pads. Cleary said, "I don't think children themselves have changed that much. It's the world that has changed."
Ivan Posey is the former chairman of the Eastern Shoshone Tribe. Now he's campaigning for a spot in the Wyoming legislature to keep a Native perspective in the statehouse. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The former chairman of the Eastern Shoshone Tribe has announced a bid for the Wyoming House. Wyoming Public Radio's Chris Clements reports that if he wins in November, he'll be the only Native American representative in the state legislature.
Ivan Posey is running as a conservative Democrat against Lander Representative Sarah Penn for House District 33, which encompasses part of the Wind River Reservation. Posey says if elected, his priorities include allowing traditional Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho beliefs and teaching methods to be a bigger part of school curricula on Wind River.
Whether that's through beadwork or setting up a teepee or, you know, just our hand games, some of our cultural things that help students succeed in those areas.
Posey added that he'd also like to secure more health care funding for tribal members on the reservation. Cheyenne Senator Afi Ellis, who is Navajo, is currently the only Native politician in Cheyenne. She recently announced that she'll retire from the legislature in 2025. Currently, the Wyoming legislature is overwhelmingly white, male, and Republican, with only a handful of Native American officials elected since 1980. I'm Chris Clements.
The Burt Lake Band of Ottawa and Chippewa Indians have preserved the tribe's history in northern Michigan with a new book. The history includes the violent colonization of the band's village in the year 1900 and the legal battles that persist to this day. Interlochen Public Radio's Michael Livingston was shown around what used to be Indian Village and spoke with the tribe's historian who helped compile the book, A Cloud Over the Land.
On the top of a hill overlooking an icy Burt Lake, Ken Parkey walks through a small cemetery filled with a few dozen white crosses. He scans the land, looking for signs of an old settlement.
So I was always told it was down in that area, right down in there? Yeah, about where that little valley is there, back, kind of back over that way. That's where I was told where it was at.
Several of Parkey's ancestors are buried here. Some lived in the original settlement that stood here more than a century ago. Back then, the village had log cabins made with lumber from a nearby sawmill and was a thriving community. Then came October 15th, 1900, when a group of men, including a sheriff and a land speculator, burned the village down with kerosene. The book, A Cloud Over the Land, tells the story about how the Burt Lake Band lost that land, but also about the fight to get it back. Even now, the band is trying to obtain federal reaffirmation, which would return the label of sovereign nation to the Northwest Peninsula on Burt Lake. Tribal historian Deborah Richman says she hopes the book will remind the region and the country that the band still remains.
Only now when we can tell our story and when people can hear our story are we allowed to start healing. We would like to focus on the good parts of our culture, but there's this just big piece. It very much is a cloud over our families and over our history because we want to right the wrongs that happened to our ancestors.
A Cloud Over the Land is available to purchase on the Burt Lake Band website. Richman says the book has already sold over 500 copies. For National Native News, I'm Michael Livingston.
On Wednesday, the Johnson County Sheriff's Office in Kansas released a statement saying they do not suspect foul play in the death of Cole Brings-Plenty. The Haskell Indian Nations University student and actor went missing from Lawrence on March 31st. He was found deceased on April 5th in Johnson County. His disappearance and death hit the Haskell community and the greater Kansas City Native community hard. People across Indian country also showed support to his family and friends. Funeral services are being held this weekend on the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation in South Dakota, where Brings-Plenty is from. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native American advocates will take their grievances over the Line 5 pipeline before a United Nations commission next week. They claim the pipeline is illegally crossing tribal lands. Mark Richardson has the story.
Next week, Native American leaders from the Midwest will go before a United Nations panel with their concerns over a controversial oil pipeline they say is trespassing on tribal lands. Enbridge's Line 5 operation in the Great Lakes region is expected to be a topic when the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues convenes Monday in New York. In the Midwest, the law firm Earth Justice represents some tribes contesting the rerouting of Line 5 in Wisconsin. Attorney Debbie Chitzwer says climate change is affecting the region and tribal nations' ability to exercise their treaty rights.
The perpetuation of this fossil fuel infrastructure will only worsen that and will affect their special tribal resources like sugar maple and loons and whitefish and other species that are integral part of Bay Mills and other tribal nations.
The pipeline runs through Wisconsin and Michigan, traversing the Treaty Reserve territory of tribal nations, including the Bay Mills Indian Community and Bad River Band of Lake Superior Chippewa. Enbridge rejects those claims and says it isn't trespassing on tribal lands. Similar cases have been filed in other parts of the Midwest. In Michigan, opponents say they're worried about Enbridge's plan to construct an oil tunnel beneath the Great Lakes. The company says it would be safer than existing pipelines, but Native American Rights Fund senior staff attorney Wes Furlong sees it as a disaster waiting to happen.
There is a likelihood that if a leak happened within that tunnel, it would cause a catastrophic failure. Essentially, the tunnel could explode underneath the Straits of Mackinac, pumping crude oil into the Strait and into the Great Lakes.
There's pending litigation over the state of Michigan's order to shut down the pipeline and ordering Enbridge to vacate the state-owned bottomlands of the Strait of Mackinac. Furlong says pushing back against Line 5 aligns with calls to reduce the use of fossil fuels, citing its connection to climate change and the impact on treaty reserve resources in the Midwest on which tribes rely.
There's pending litigation over the state of Michigan's order to shut down the pipeline and ordering Enbridge to vacate the state-owned bottomlands of the Strait of Mackinac. So that would spell, I think, the end of Line 5 as we know it.
For Illinois News Connection, I'm Mark Richardson.
O.J. Simpson's death has the nation looking back on the infamous murder trial that resulted in his acquittal. Experts say one of the lasting impacts is news coverage and how people consume it. The lengthy trial proceedings from the mid-1990s were televised, setting up a pathway to cameras in the courtroom. University of Minnesota media professor Jane Kirtley says it also ushered in a cottage industry of pundits brought in to analyze the events of each day. That made it easier for people to get a recap during a 24-hour news cycle, but she adds it was a drawback to getting so much information through analysis.
It also meant that people could suspend their critical thinking to a certain extent. And I believe we're still seeing that today. The rise of social media has only made it easier.
However, she said it did expose issues with how criminal cases are handled, and viewers were able to see it firsthand. Curtley says given how the accessibility of information has exploded since the trial, news consumers can't lose sight of the need to examine where they're getting it from. That includes whether the source is producing the news themselves and if the details are being vetted. At the Center for Media Literacy, Tessa Joel says the trial firmly established entertainment as a core element of news coverage, making it profitable. She says outlets still have to reel people in with this approach to survive in a challenging landscape. But she adds a sensationalized cause like this one sometimes helps with the management engagement of positive views.
They were seeing what the news organizations chose to show. And that gave people a chance to talk to each other and compare notes. In that sense, I think people probably did become savvier.
The trial also touched on racial issues and domestic violence, and Joel says it was natural for people to have strong emotions about the developments. But she notes it serves as a reminder for audiences to not let their gut feelings cloud how they weigh the facts presented to them.
We need to see that our emotions are definitely present and that they may be swaying our thinking. And so it's important to ask questions, to be skeptical.
That was Tessa Jolls with the Center for Media Literacy.
Industry in general has a huge carbon footprint, but a new technology could help. A new industrial-strength heat pump boiler uses electricity to generate the high-temperature steam needed to manufacture many products. As he himself promised earlier, Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Steam is a powerful source of heat. In factories, it can be used to drive chemical reactions, power compressors, boil liquids, dye fabric, and more.
The beer that you drink, to the products that you use, like toothpaste, to the clothes you wear, all of it is touched by steam.
Ashwin Salvi is with Atmos Zero, a company that's working to reduce the climate impact of making steam. To generate steam, most companies rely on boilers that run on fossil fuels like coal and gas, which emit a lot of planet-warming carbon pollution. But Atmos Zero has developed a new industrial-strength heat pump boiler that uses electricity to pull heat out of the surrounding air and convert that heat into high-temperature steam. Atmos Zero's first commercial customer is the New Belgium Brewery in Fort Collins, Colorado. New Belgium plans to brew beer using the technology as soon as next year. But the heat pumps could be used for much more than making beer. Salvi says their design makes them easy to integrate into a wide range of manufacturing facilities.
With one product, we can standardize the way that we create steam for a wide variety of industries.
So by making steam with electricity, this technology could reduce the carbon footprint of manufacturing. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, April 12, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Althea Billings. Special thanks to Eric Tegedoff, Farah Siddiqui, Catherine Carley, Antonio Gonzalez, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of the Evening News is the very busy Althea Billings. A podcast of the newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Ray Bodwell.
And I'm Josh Salem. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for Counterspin.
Welcome to Counterspin, your weekly look behind the headlines. I'm Janine Jackson. This week on Counterspin, U.S. corporate media's story about Haiti is familiar. Haiti, according to various recent reports, has whipped from one calamity to another. The country is a cataclysm of hunger and terror, teetering on the brink of collapse.